Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvedo, but this week, we're bringing in reinforcements. It's our European guru, our friend Kieran Clark, who's here, so I'm going to bring him up first. How are you, Kieran?
I'm very well, Carlos. It's a pleasure to be with you guys, as always. And, you know, I guess spring must be coming because even I was on the driving range last week. So spring is coming. The golf season is heating up. So I'm glad to be on and talk about it. So let's go.
Let's go. Hey, Fred. Hi. How are you?
I'm ready to go. We finally heard from an old guy on the PGA Tour. It's Phil Mickelson. Nearly won at Pebble Beach. Lydia Ko won in New Zealand for the third time in 4 years. And Bernhard Langer hung on to win the Champions Tour in Naples, Florida. We've got Kieran Clark in the house and have two great teaching professionals to talk about modern-day golf instruction. I'm excited, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go, and let's start right away. We are weekend backspin, and I'm going to start talking about the PGA Tour, the AT&T Pro-Am Championship, where Phil Mickelson, you mentioned it, he held a two-shot lead at Pebble Beach, but he struggled on the final day. Jonas Blix of Sweden was the first to catch the left-hander, but he fell away with a bogey on the 14th. Hiroshi Iwata of Japan was within one until he dropped a shot at the 16th. But it was Vaughn Taylor, yes, who set the mark with a superb final round of 65 that included four straight birdies from the 13th. He almost had five. Mickelson found himself two off Taylor's 17-under target with two to play, but he gave himself a great chance of matching the number. He birdied a testing par 3 17th and then left himself with a five-foot birdie putt on the last to force a playoff. But hey, it didn't drop. Mickelson doubled over in disappointment, and Taylor was a champion again for the first time since the 2005 Reno Tahoe Open. You know, for Vaughn Taylor's Cinderella story at Pebble is quite an incredible one. He's a 39-year-old, so Fred chucked one for the old guys there. Yes, hasn't been a full member of the PGA Tour since 2012. He wasn't even in the field for this tournament until Carl Peterson withdrew last Friday. He had been playing in South America and on the Web.com Tour and was 447th on the official World Golf Ranking. With the win, he's an Augusta resident. Taylor will play in the Masters for the first time since 2008. Phil Mickelson, well, going for his 43rd PGA Tour victory and his first since the Open Championship in 2013, couldn't quite believe he had missed out that one. He lifted out. He said afterwards he was certain he was going to make the playoff forcing putt on the 72nd hole. He also mentioned that one key is that he's having more fun playing golf than he's had in years. I wonder if strong finishes have anything to do with that. But anyway, having said that, the 45-year-old is clearly back to something approaching his best form after this event and a tie for third in the Career Builder Challenge. Finally, England's Justin Rose had a steady week, finishing in a tie for sixth. It could have been better, but for a drop shot at the 72nd hole, the 2013 U.S. Open champion has been easing himself into the 2016 season, and this was just his second start of the calendar year on the PGA Tour. It was quite an improvement from his miscut at the Farmers Open. Kieran, there could be better things to come from Justin in the coming weeks.
Yeah, absolutely, Carlos. And, of course, that's actually Justin Rose's first ever competitive appearance at Pebble Beach, which is quite a remarkable stat when you think about how good a player he's been for so many years now. And obviously Phil Mickelson's looking back, getting closer to his best, and has shown a really good sign of form so far this season. We'll be building towards Augusta, though, of course, I'm disappointed. Perhaps maybe the nerves got to him there towards the end of that. Hasn't been in contention for a long time, really, to win a tournament. He had that chance there, and he didn't quite do it in the end. But for Vaughn Taylor, you know, fantastic win, a real life changer as such. Now he's got his career is now back on track and rejuvenated after such a long malaise. And I kind of drew parallels on Sunday evening to the win of Oliver Wilson at the Dunhill Links a couple of years ago at St Andrews, when very similar events, of course, free courses, pro-am format, and Wilson, who had played in the Ryder Cup team in 2008, fell off the tour, was struggling on the Challenge Tour even, got an invite to Dunhill and dramatically won that to win his first ever European Tour event. So I think there are parallels to be made there, and I think people have made those comparisons since then. But for Vaughan Taylor, obviously fantastic. But while we're watching the great vistas of Pebble Beach in the Monterey Peninsula, down in South Africa, Charles Schwartzel was dominating, as many expected him to do so, at the Shwane Open at Pretoria Golf Club. The former Masters champion was a massive favourite going into that event, and he duly delivered, especially on the weekend, shooting 66 and 63 on the final day to push right ahead of the field and win by a commanding 8 shots ahead of Jeff Winther of Denmark. So, you know, a great win for Charles, but it's funny, that was his 11th European Tour sanctioned event, and the vast majority of them have actually come in South Africa. In fact, of his 11 sanctioned European Tour events, only 3 of them were not in South Africa, and that was twice in Spain at the Open de España and the Madrid Masters in 2007 and 2008 respectively, and of course at Augusta National 5 years ago. And indeed, since winning at Augusta, he hasn't won anywhere else in the world but in South Africa. So we all know how good a player he can be and how good a player he certainly is. And technically, he's got a fantastic swing, and he's on his day, he's a very capable player. But he hasn't quite shown it consistently on the PGA Tour, or indeed on the European Tour in the bigger events. So it's time for Charles to actually deliver, because, you know, he's still a young guy, he has that pedigree behind him, but he's got to deliver more in the big events to really prove to us all he wasn't in reality a one-hit wonder at Augusta 5 years ago. But someone who is not a one-hit wonder, Carlos, is unquestionably Lydia Ko, who won, and it's just a mind-boggling statistic when you think about it. You know, she's 18 years old, and the weekend there, in a home tournament, the New Zealand Open, she won for the 15th time on either the LPGA Tour or the Ladies European Tour. And, you know, absolutely remarkable. And it was a funny old day as well, because a 5.7 magnitude earthquake actually struck the Christchurch area where the tournament was played 10 minutes before she got off to play her final round. You know, a remarkable sort of coincidence there in a situation, but she overcame that sort of unsettling, literally, to go on to win that event, finishing ahead of Felicity Johnson, who was 2 shots behind her. And Lydia, you know, is a remarkable, astonishing talent. You know, we all know it, and I think it's probably we don't talk about her enough. Particularly, I don't know why that is, whether it's because she's a woman or whether it's because she's not perhaps of American descent. Maybe that goes against her in terms of the grabbing headlines. But she's an astonishing player, and has continually proven that time and time again, breaking all sorts of records. If you people start comparing, looking at Tiger's records when he was a young guy, 21, or Jordan Spieth at 22, look at what Lydia Ko's done at 18. I know it's a different game, women's game, but the stats are still there, the facts are there, the records are still there, and they are mind-boggling. But what also stands out about Lydia Ko is not just the fact she's a fantastic player, but she also seems to be a tremendous personality, a great person, and a very mature, very intelligent young lady. And she proved that even further by donating her tournament prize winnings from the New Zealand Open, which she won for the third time. She donated that to the fund to help any damage caused by that earthquake. So an incredible gesture from her, and the superlatives, the adjectives, you know, you almost run out of them, because every single time she plays, you know, she does seems to do something quite remarkable. And she does it in a way that she's one of the most efficient players I think I've ever seen. You know, she doesn't seem to waste shots on the course. She doesn't necessarily do anything particularly spectacular, but she does everything very well. And I think in that sense, perhaps underrated for that reason. But she's an astonishing player with a great mindset on the course and off the course as well, as she's proven again there. And Fred, you know, you've met Lydia Ko. You interviewed her, I believe, briefly one time, and you know, you've had that first impression of that, personal impression of her, and she's a remarkable player and also certainly a fantastic character as well. So what are your impressions, Fred, of Lydia Ko's win there in New Zealand?
Oh, it's fantastic, and yes, I've had the chance to talk to Lydia a couple times one-on-one and sat in a couple of her press conferences, and she is so calm and so cool. Yeah. She acts like she's 35 years old. She's absolutely unbelievable. So, yeah, another great win for her, three years out of 4 down there. Mm-hmm. And so the LPGA Tour gets back in action this week with the ISPS and the Australia Women's Open. near Melbourne, 1976, and Greg Norman won his first pro tournament ever on this golf course. So a lot of history where they're playing this week. Hey, also I wanted to mention, too, do you guys remember a couple years ago we had the story about Vaughn Taylor nearly drowning when he fell out of his boat fishing in a lake near his home in Augusta, Georgia? It was August of 2014. The lake he was fishing in had a big water runoff or suction area, and you weren't even supposed to go down there with a boat, and he was tied up on one of the markers there, and his boat came loose and got sucked into this thing, and it got flipped over, and he jumped out and had to swim to shore, and they saved him or whatever. But I don't know if you guys remember that. I thought of that when he was winning the other day. The other thing, let's talk a little bit about the Champions Tour. They were in Naples, Florida for the Chubb Classic. Evidently, the new ruling banning the anchored stroke has not deterred Bernhard Langer from posting low scores. Using a long putter with an unanchored stroke, he carded 62-66 to get to 16 under par through the first two rounds, and that allowed him to coast on Sunday with a one-over par 73 to hang on to beat Freddie Couples, who gained seven shots on Langer in the final round with a 6-under par 66. Still losing by three shots, though. Here's a name you might remember, Jesper Parnevik. The guy with the funny hat, video dancing fame, posted his best finish on the Champions Tour with a T3 finish. With this win, Langer earns his 26th victory on the Champions Tour and moves into third place on the all-time victory list behind Hale Irwin with 45 wins and Lee Trevino with 29. He also takes sole possession of the 2016 Charles Schwab Cup race with just three events in the books in the 2016 season. Langer collected his third top 10 finish and has earned $333,000. The race for the Charles Schwab Cup may be over, guys. Should they just give the trophy and the big check to Langer right now? I'm going to make a prediction right here, okay? If Augusta is firm and fast, Langer could be a factor at the end of the week at the Masters, guys. Carl, it's back to you.
That's a prediction I want to see. Well,
mark
that
down.
Mark,
you know what? He always plays well there.
Oh, he does, definitely. I have to admit that. It's on record. We have it here. It's recorded, so you guys have it.
Well, I will certainly not forget when dear Bernard misses the cut after rounds of 75-76.
Hold on a second, guys.
Okay.
And I love Bernard Langer. I'm only joking, but I think there's a difference between playing well at Augusta and actually contending and then winning. And I'm not sure at this stage of his career he really has that in him, but no, he's a fantastic player, and it's great.
Didn't he just,
so playing well with,
didn't he just finish like third or fourth, like one or two years, a couple years ago?
He finished eighth 2 years ago, I believe, but
yeah,
he was a mile behind Bubba Watson, so it's... But still, he plays great. You know, he's a remarkable player, and it's fantastic still see him playing well in the post-anchoring era.
Well, that's something we would have to discuss afterwards. You mentioned something. Let's move on, okay? That will wrap up the weekend back.
We can spend the rest of the show talking about that.
That's a no-go area.
Let's wrap it up.
There are two things that are banned from this show, Carlos. One is the anchored putting ban, and two is Donald Trump. So no,
I know.
We're going to talk about anchored putter later.
Hey, let's wrap it up. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Kieran, you're going to take the tee shot on this one, and you're going to talk to us about some famous Scottish links that are facing money problems for their closure with Spurs. So what it's all about.
Yeah, this is a story that's kind of personal to me, given it's in where I am right now. I'm in Perth right now in Scotland, and I suppose many people will claim that Perth, actually, unknown to the rest of the world, has perhaps the oldest golf course in the world. Many people think of St Andrews, of course, being the home of golf, as it were, but there's certainly evidence out there that golf was played in Perth at least 70 to 100 years before that, with King James IV of Scotland playing golf in the Perth area in the early 1500s. And perhaps even goes further back than that. But the course in Perth is a North Inch, and Perth is a city that is situated between two large recreational parks, the North Inch and the South Inch, and the North one has a golf course on, an 18-hole golf course, a municipal course where anyone can go and play. It's home to two ancient golf clubs, the Perth Merchants and the Perth Artisans Club, and it's run by the local government, the Perth and Kinross Council. But unfortunately, with the games being played there for 500 years, the course was laid, the current design was laid out by old Tom Morris towards the end of the 19th century, and it runs alongside the River Tay. It's a really spectacular location. If you've seen the pictures of it, it's a lovely place to play. I've played there many times, and actually, given the price it is to play, which is very inexpensive, it's actually a more than decent golf course. There are some fantastic holes, particularly running across the edge of the river. But the course is facing financial problems. At least the council was facing financial problems. Budgets are being cut from the central government down. The local government had to cut, estimate £5 million from their budget for the next 2 years. And in doing that, one of the considerations was actually going to perhaps cut the funding to the golf course, which would estimate to save about £100,000 a year. Not a massive amount of money when you think about it, and certainly you can make it up elsewhere. But fortunately, after much public clamour and protest, when the budget was determined and decided upon last week, they determined not to actually include the golf course among the cuts. The golf course will be preserved for the next 2 years guaranteed, which is obviously a massive relief to everybody who plays there is concerned. And actually, it's not the first time it's happened. A couple of years ago, the council was in a similar position, and they tried to offload the course to a local organisation called the Live Active Leisure, who are subsidised partly by the government and run all the leisure facilities in Perth and Kinross. They run the swimming pools, the ice rink, all the sports centres. But they declined to actually take on the golf course among their properties. So the golf course at that point was actually in limbo. Then the council decided to rejuvenate it, put more money into it. Of course, at this time, the Ryder Cup was played just down the road, only 15 miles away, Glen Eagles, 2 years ago. And it seems madness that you cut a golf course at this time when you had such a massive event on your doorstep. You're trying to build a legacy, trying to build something to remember that event by and attract people to the game, and no better place to do that than actually a public golf course. So thankfully it was preserved, and a local professional by the name of Niall McGill, he came in and he's brought in different membership criteria, different reduced prices, attracted young kids to the course as well, so they've actually grown their junior program significantly, attracting new players of all ages indeed to the course in the past 18 months or so, and also improved the conditioning of it as well, because with low funding and a lack of obviously a paying membership, the money wasn't there to actually preserve the golf course as they would like to, but that's actually been changed in recent times, and the golf course is in far better condition than it has been for a long time. So it's good news that it's been preserved for a couple of years, but what's frustrating to me and to everybody else is, this golf course, people love golf history. A lot of people come to Scotland obviously to experience that history themselves. They go to St Andrews, they go to Carnoustie, they go to Royal Dornoch and so on. But the Perth North Inch, in many ways, as we say, that is arguably, it might just be the first recognisable golf course in the world. Certainly it's where the first documented golf was ever played on that land. Obviously the golf course is unrecognisable now, but that land has seen the game played there for over 500 years. And actually the first ever golf equipment, recorded golf equipment, was actually bought in Perth, the city. So there's a lot of golf history to the city and the area, but it's never documented, it's never promoted, not just even internationally, but just nationally. There are people who are in Scotland who have never heard of the North Inch. And to me, that's something of a tragedy, because it's a really affordable course to go and play. It's a chance to support a public golf course, and also a chance to experience a bit of history in a really spectacular location. So thankfully, it will be preserved for at least a couple more years, and hopefully in that time they can continue the progress that they've made in recent times and actually make the golf course flourish, attract more players to it, and hopefully get more people involved in the game, and also bring more people from further afield to actually come and experience the North Inch and sample that bit of history. But you really should have chosen to market it better than they're doing right now. But certainly for me, in this area, we have three golf courses in Perth. it would have been awfully sad to lose the one public golf course that we have here. So it's a relief for all golfers in the town and in the area. But I think as well, people further afield, they should be looking at this as a sigh of relief, because it's a big part of history, and it would have been awfully tragic, Carlos, if we lost it.
Hopefully, you know, I can keep doing the efforts and I could be there. And I didn't know it was that old until you just brought it up. I mean, it's incredible, and hopefully, historically speaking, you know, it's great, and hopefully you can stay there. Hey, I have some news about a four-letter word that right now it's trending more than any other in the whole world. It's Zika. You might have heard about it. That's a virus that is transmitted to humans by infected mosquitoes. Though the World Health Organization last week declared Zika an international health emergency, that could infect as many as 4 million people in the Americas. You know, symptoms are typically mild fever and rash. Other symptoms include muscle pain, joint pain, headache, pain behind the eyes, and conjunctivitis. But Zika virus disease is usually mild, with symptoms lasting only a few days. Well, it's wreaking havoc in golf for some reason. First, a memo sent out by the PGA Tour Latin America confirmed that the tour has pushed back two events, the Guatemala Open and the Honduras Open, farther into the spring, in an effort to take advantage of drier climates and combative medical measures to fight the spread of the virus. PGA Tour Executive Vice President of Communications, Ty Foto, told Golf.com that the International Olympic Committee and the International Golf Federation are looking at ways to ensure the athletes competing in the Olympics are looked after. But, you know, leading male golfers have already said they will not allow the fears about the Zika virus keeping them away from going to Brazil when their sport returns to the Olympics after an absence of more than a century. But the women, they're not on the same boat. Apparently, you know, the likes of Lydia Ko, Christy Kerr, even though Lydia Ko has said that it's her primary goal of this year to be in the Olympics, her, Christy Kerr, Lexi Thompson, Azahara Munoz, they have expressed that they are monitoring the developments, and for now, they're not overly concerned. Look, here I go. I think this is getting out of proportion. You know, while it's the same mosquito that transmits the dengue, the chikungunya, the West Nile virus, and the yellow fever, Zika is not even in the same zip code regarding the symptoms or consequences. The only big problem right now is for pregnant women that get infected, because the study has linked babies to microcephalia. So unless Lydia, Christy, Lexi, Sahara, or any of them are pregnant, they should have no problem going there. Other than that, it's the same ballgame for everyone. Just do what you always do when you're vacationing in any of those countries. Get your DEET and drench yourself in it. Trust me, I am from Puerto Rico. I deal with these things there, and they are dealt with in these countries. By the time the Olympics arrive, the epidemic will be an afterthought, and we'll be able to finally see the sport we love back on it for good. Besides, Fred, while it is called the Summer Olympics, it's winter in Brazil at the time, so the risks are minimal to those choosing temperatures for not being optimal for the mosquitoes. So, my God. I'm sorry. Fred, it's your turn.
I am glad you cleared that up for us, Carlos. I thought we had a real problem on our hands. Now we don't have to worry about that. Who's the soccer player, or what's her name? She's not going, and because of the mosquitoes or whatever. Carlos says it's not a problem. It's wintertime. It's not going to be no big deal. Don't worry about it. Okay. Hey, you guys also remember that last year we reported a group of caddies on the PGA Tour were suing the tour over the mandatory wearing of caddy bibs with tournament sponsors, corporate logos, and not receiving any compensation. It's estimated that tournament sponsors receive approximately $50 million annually from the caddy bib logo sales. In a report from Yahoo Sports, the suit had been filed in a Northern California District Federal Court and was heard by Judge Vince Chihabria, who dismissed the lawsuit last week with prejudice, which means it probably can't be refiled. It was filed in this particular federal district court because it's the same court that found the NCAA guilty of using collegiate athletes' likenesses for profit and not sharing with those athletes. You remember the Ed O'Bannon case. 168 professional caddies had joined the suit up from the original 81. This was kind of a tipping point for caddies who have been at odds with the tour for many years over poor conditions and treatment by the tour. Chhabria ruled the caddy's overall complaint about poor treatment by the tour has merit, but this federal lawsuit about bibs does not. At the heart of the lawsuit was a claim that the tour was using them as human billboards because the bibs they wore on the course, which featured the logo of the title sponsor, amounted to advertising for which they received no compensation. The judge further explained that the contract a caddy signs to work a PGA Tour event says the caddies are to wear uniforms and identification badges prescribed by the tournament and the tour. The caddies, in their brief, acknowledged that the PGA Tour had required caddies to wear bibs for decades. In other words, for decades, the bib had been the primary part of the uniform that the tour requires caddies to wear. Sounds like a lot of legal attorney speak to me, guys. The only reasonable interpretation of the contract, the caddies agreed to the tour that they could make them wear the bibs. Okay, da da da. So anyhow, they lost their suit. They Richard Meadow of the Lanier Law Firm, which represents the caddies, said the decision wouldn't be closely reviewed to determine grounds for appeal. We are, however, pleased the court acknowledged that the caddies are treated poorly by the PGA Tour and hope that the tour takes to heart and begins to treat them with respect and dignity they deserve. The tour said in the statement it was pleased by the decision. I guess they would be. Evidently, the tour came up with something for the caddies in this deal, but they're not going to get a big piece of the big multi-million-dollar pie, Kieran.
Yeah, which is a real shame. And I think, for me, the biggest thing here for the caddies is actually I think the players themselves have to stand up here and be counted and actually stand up for their caddies and really push the tour to actually make some changes, positive changes for the way caddies are treated, not just in tournaments, but also, of course, financially as well. Because in the end, the players ultimately should really are the lifeblood of the tour, essentially should run the tour as such, and they should make their voice louder heard to support their caddies, the guys that they employ to support them on a day-to-day basis. But one person who has no worries right now about caddies and actually is trying to get into the Solheim Cup team, or not the Solheim Cup team, actually lead the Solheim Cup team next year, is Annika Sørenstam, the greatest European golfer, lady golfer of all time, and she wants to be a Solheim Cup captain next year when the matches are staged in Iowa. And she confirmed last year that she had submitted her name to the Ladies European Tour Selection Committee for consideration. And surely, she's guaranteed to get it. Surely, you know, she has an extraordinary record in the Solheim Cup. No one has won more matches for Europe than Annika. She won 22 matches, which is also equaled by Laura Davis. And she played in 8 matches, of course, has won 10 major championships and 72 times in the LPGA before retiring, of course, a few years ago now. So Annika is been an incredible player for so many years, and she has been an incredible ambassador for ladies golf. Since then, of course, has actually been an assistant captain in the Solheim Cup the last couple of years. So it's to Karen Koch and then to Lieselot Neumann in Colorado. So obviously brings a massive pedigree. But who will she be up against, of course? Well, supposedly her great rival, if you like, on the American side, being Julie Engster, of course, is really probably the best American player of her generation. And, of course, led America to victory last year in Germany, that controversial and remarkable comeback from the U.S. to overcome Europe and end a 3-in-a-row attempt from that side. So it would be a really compelling duo there, a really compelling battle between Sørenstam and Engster, two of the greatest players of all time on either side. And that would certainly draw attention to the Solheim Cup, which would be a fantastic thing. The golf of the Solheim is always compelling. It's a great spectacle, and perhaps doesn't quite receive the attention and the viewership that it deserves. And maybe having these two blockbuster names on either side of the divide would actually attract attention. So, you know, Annika's, it would be a real shock if she wasn't confirmed as the captain for next year. I think it's an inevitability. It's about time. And I think Laura Davis will be the captain 2 years after that. But for Annika, obviously, she feels that this is her time to become captain. She's had the experience of being a player and then being an assistant captain, observing how the process works from that side of the game. So I think she'll be it's going to be a really compelling battle between the two great names, Engster and Sørenstam. So, Carlos, it should be something to look forward to. We are big fans and promoters of the ladies' game on this show, and particularly the Solheim Cup. Obviously, the last couple of years, it's been really compelling. Certainly last year it was. And with these two at the head, Carlos, I think it will be equally compelling next year.
European Solheim Cup women's team. Make it happen. I want to see that. And I can't wait if that would be the case. I mean, the storylines there would be, wow, mm-hmm. enormous, starting with those two. Hey, let's talk about, you know, if there are 25 million people playing golf in America, and those numbers have been stable for the last 4 years, why the doom and gloom talk about the game? You know, World Golf Foundation CEO Steve Mona, who we've had in the show on different occasions, has to answer that question on a regular basis. He has been the CEO since 2008, or about the time the economy went bust, and golf suffered just like any other business that relied on leisure activity and disposable income. And he says that the so-called millennials, that group between 18 and 34 years old, is coming, and the game should adjust to their every need. Todd Leonard reported to the San Diego Union Tribune on the bullish tone that Mona has used for the state of the game. Let's set a basis here with some simple numbers. While Tiger was at his peak, the National Golf Foundation estimated that 30 million people played at least one round a year. Before he came into the scene, it was 25 million, which is the same number that it has dropped since the end of 2013. So then an alarm went off. But the industry experts say that it was understandable given the bottom coming out of the economy in 2008. Since then, people are leaving the game, are being replaced by those who are taking it up. The key segments to all golf, they point out, are the youth and the millennials. The National Golf Foundation did a comprehensive study of millennials and found that 6 million are currently playing and contributing about $5 billion annually to the golf industry. Another 12 million millennials expressed interest in taking up the game at some point. So the NGF study reported that the millennials value the tenets of the game as much as their older peers, but are turned off by the perceptions of stodginess or lack of acceptance. Among the areas that need to be addressed, Mona said, are dress codes, use of technology on the course, and even the use of music while playing. Bigger issues, such as the perception of golf being expensive, have also arisen. You know, here I go again. This is no rocket science. You know, in every generation, that age group is the future of whatever is set out to be done in life. I agree. We have to attract them and adapt things to them. But if they would also put some effort learning and in fixing the things that made the ones that already left from the other age groups, those are the easiest ones to gain back. They were already playing. We should make efforts to include everyone, not just add another group. So industry experts focus on making game more inviting, growing participation by the millennials. I tell you this, if you change the game for one age group, the other age group will feel like the millennials apparently feel excluded. Making an exclusive effort and give options to everyone. There are enough golf courses and facilities in this country that we can adapt some to each age group and make conditions in tournaments and activities to attractive to each. That's the way to grow the game. Not only that. You know, otherwise, this will be a bottomless pit, Fred. You will keep putting things in, but the ones at the bottom will continue to fall out.
Yeah, it's always a part of economics, you know. It's just the way it goes. Some things are really well run, and they do well, and others aren't so well run, and they fail. So, but we documented many times on the show that what these four young guys are doing right now, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, and Ricky Fowler, getting these millennials, these 18 to 35-year-olds, attention is having the Tiger Woods effect and bringing more young people to the game for sure. It shows the TV numbers and it's gonna help bring more people in as these guys do well, and you know they're going to. So, hey, Jack Nicklaus is one of the most revered names in not only golf but all of sports. He has never had a hint of scandal or misappropriate behavior besmirch his good name. Even when his business empire experienced financial difficulties in the 80s, he was able to avoid negative publicity and seemed to satisfy all investors, and in the end has become one of the most successful brands in the sports world. He is the Golden Bear, faithful family man, father and grandfather extraordinaire, Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient. It seems the Justice Department has a complaint about how Jack's Golf Course Design Company allegedly filled in federally protected wetlands during a redesign of the Bears Club in North Palm Beach in 2010. 6 years after the fact, that seems about right up to speed for the federal government. In a federal lawsuit filed in October, government attorneys allege Nicholas-owned entities filled in close to an acre, a whole acre, of wetlands in 2010 without permission from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in order to relocate a tee box on the club's 15th hole. The federal lawsuit claims the Bears Club developers ignored an Army Corps of Engineers denial to modify the original building permit, which included an easement agreement to set aside several acres as protected wetlands. The Corps found out the Bears Club had filled in the wetlands from the South Florida Water Management District on October of 2010, and this complaint says, federal prosecutors contend the Bears Club and its owners had economic motive for seeking the modification. The initiation fee for a golf membership at the Bears Club is $90,000. Kieran, in case you want to jump in there on that, just send me a check. I'll get you in there. And the annual fee is $25,000 a year, according to the complaint. Which I don't know if they're mad because Bears Club's getting so much money, or that they, you know, or that they moved the tee a little bit. Nicholas's development partner, Clarendon Properties Group, and its owners, Ivan Charles Fredrickson and Robert Whitley. The parties have been charged with wrongdoing in this lawsuit, find the charges somewhat puzzling. The attorney for the Bears Club said, "We believe it is a tempest in a teapot. We don't believe we violated the agreement with the Corps." Last month, the Bears Club filed a motion to dismiss the government's complaint, alleging the Corps doesn't have the jurisdiction over the wetlands anyhow. The easement expressly provides that it can be altered or amended, the motion states. It also expressly provides that the state, and only the state, and the South Florida Water Management District possesses the power to grant amendments. The appropriate state agency authorized the very work the Corps alleges was unlawfully undertaken. Sounds like these guys need to be going and find some bad guys to really run after instead of worrying about 1 acre of wetlands down there in Florida where they got more swamp than they got anything else anyhow. Anyhow, so that's pretty much it. They're fighting over a little bit of a swamp area where they changed a tee around, and I don't know, seems like an awful lot of to do about nothing, but that's how attorneys make their money, you know, getting people into court. But bottom line, you know, since Jack got that Presidential Medal of Freedom honor, maybe he can just dial up his buddy Barack Obama and maybe just kind of get this thing swept under the rug before he gets out of office, before Hillary gets in there. Hey, guys, that is the Par 5 news brought to you by United Golf Network. Wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. Would you like to get 17% off your golf equipment, clothing, balls, clubs, shoes, apparel, everything else that you need for golf? United Golf Network can hook you up with that. They have an excellent product line. They have all the name brands. They got everything you need. They have great deals on golf travel, especially if you're going down to Myrtle Beach. They can pick you up with some phenomenal deals down there. And if you're a golf director in their program, you get additional discounts off everything. It's a really good deal. I urge all our listeners to check into it. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com to check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And that wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our DIG, Michael Breed, and the practice range with professional PGA professional Mike Fay. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VAG, very important guest of the week. His name is Michael Breed. He operates the Michael Breed Golf Academy, and sorry, Kieran, I have to mention the name, at the Donald Trump Golf Links at Ferry Point. Sorry, I had to do it. And he's one of the top 50 golf instructors in America by both Golf Digest and Golf Magazine. He's also a best-selling author, star of Golf Channel's The Golf Fix, and host of SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio's A New Breed of Golf. He's a very proud member of the PGA and was chosen as the PGA's National Teacher of the Year 2012. Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview.
Yeah, I saw that Michael was going to be at the Western Golf Show up here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I had the opportunity to stop in there on Friday evening. Michael was wrapping up his presentation there on the stage. He did a great job, very engaging with the crowd, does a nice job in front of people. You can tell he really enjoys it. When he got done, I asked him if we could talk for a few seconds, and he granted me an interview, and so I was able to get it on tape.
Let's play it.
We're at the Western Michigan Golf Show talking to Michael Breed. I'm sure you've seen him on the Golf Channel. He does some announcing for some tournaments. I know you're always doing the Professional Golfers Championship every year. You do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to be able to be pretty immersed in the game of golf, as I know you are, and it's a gift, honestly. It's a gift that we've been given, and I'm grateful for it.
I saw you up on the stage tonight. You were giving some tips, talking to people, interacting. You seem very relaxed, very at ease.
You know, there's nothing more fun for me than being able to speak to people, share some thoughts, make some people laugh, and answer their questions that they would have about the game of golf that appears to be so confusing to everybody. There's nothing more fun for me than to be able to do that.
Let's talk just a little bit about modern teaching techniques. I know when you're on the show, you're using common things like a heavy ball or a stick or a yard, or, you know, a hula hoop. You're using all,
yep.
But, you know, modern technology, use a track, man, spin rate, ball speed, all that stuff. Tie that all together for me, where you're at with that.
Well, first of all, I think that all that stuff is really important. I think it's much the same way as a doctor having an x-ray machine. I think you have to have it. I think you have to know how to use it, but it doesn't necessarily mean everybody needs an x-ray. And the other thing is that it does lead to an area of complication, and in large part, most people don't need to be that complicated. Most people are struggling to just hit the ball in the center of the club face, get rid of their slice. So part of the art, I think, of being a good doctor or being a good teacher is knowing what is good for whom, how many aspirins to take, how often you take it. And I have all those things at my academy. I just don't use them all at the same time on the same people. So I think for the average person, if I teach somebody how to throw a frisbee with their lead hand, they're going to learn how to lag the club, which is going to affect their descent angle, and it's going to affect their approach path. It's going to increase their club head speed. It'll do all those things that TrackMan or FlightScope, who I'm affiliated with, it'll give me all the information that I need, because the ball's not going to lie to me. So I would say, you know, I'm a big fan of understanding all that stuff, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to use it all the time.
Modern teaching, I mean, you go on a Facebook, you go on a Twitter, everybody's got an opinion, everybody's throwing something out there. How do you see social media affecting your teaching and the people you talk with?
Boy, this is a really interesting area to get into. I get very depressed and disappointed with golf professionals that bash other golf professionals. And I have spent a lot of time talking to PGA professionals about just that. I think it is rude. I think it's arrogant. I think it's obnoxious. And I think it deters people from taking golf lessons. So I am completely against it. Now, look, I don't, you know, there are a lot of people that will think, well, that should be my feeling because, you know, I'm in the light a little bit more than everybody else. That's true. But I don't really care if somebody likes me or doesn't like me, disagrees with what I do or whatever. What I really care about is, A, are people getting better? And people do people understand what I'm talking about, having fun and enjoying the experience? That, to me, is what's important. I think that there are a lot of people that are playing what I call a zero balance game. And a zero balance game is that there's only one of something. And if you have it, you're plus one. And because I don't have it, I'm minus one. And there are a lot of people that believe that if somebody is successful, then that means they're not successful. And I think everybody can be successful. And I applaud everybody that is successful. And at the same time, realize that Butch has been successful, and Hank has been successful, and Jim McLean's been successful, and I've been successful, and David Ledbetter's been successful, and everybody can be successful. And so...
And you all do just a little bit different things. You have your own methods, what works for you when you see people.
It's just like martial arts. There's Taekwondo and Jiu-Jitsu and Tai Chi and all these different arenas in martial arts, and they all work. We just have different disciplines, and that's fine. In fact, it's healthy.
People just have to commit and follow through and not be, not get tied up in listening to everything that comes down to fight.
Well, I think what it means is that people are searching, and I think that that just speaks to the fact that 80% of the people who play the game of golf don't take a golf lesson. And so they're searching for it somewhere, and they go to the internet or books or wherever, which, look, I'm grateful for, and I'm sure all the people that have written books and have done stuff on the internet are grateful for. But at the same time, what we have to do is we have to try to, as a whole, as an instructional whole, we have to try to make the game easier to understand and make it welcoming. And by fighting, by people fighting amongst one another, it's not very welcoming.
That is such a great point. I agree with that 100%. Before I let you go, just one more quick question. Of all the people you see, what's the number one common flaw that you address with nearly every student that you talk to?
I would say it's an open club face that leads to a slice, a loss of power, poor interaction or poor consistency in the interaction with the club and the ground. So tend to get more toe movement than heel movement and, through the ground. And no distance. And so as all that goes, lack of distance, lack of consistency, major slices, it's all open face. And so I would say, you know, for the person that is listening to this and trying to take something instructionally out of this, I would say figure out how to close the club face at address or in the backswing, and you will go a long way to solving all these issues that are plaguing you, including being inconsistent, including not being able to lag the club and create the distance that you're trying to get, including having as much fun as you can have.
Michael Breed, thank you very much for taking a minute to talk to us. They can see you on Golf Channel. They can find you at?
I'm at michaelbreed.com. Just go to michaelbreed.com. You get all the information on where I'm going to be appearing, what time the show is going on, all the little different things there. My golf academy at the Trump Golf Links at Perry Point Park, which is a new public golf course that just opened up outside of New York City. It's a great spot, and obviously welcoming to all.
Thanks again, Mike.
You bet.
There you have it. That was Michael Breed. And I got two things from that interview. You know, I like his views on the use of technology. I like the comparison he made there to being a good doctor using the equipment at your disposal, you know, the keys to know what to use with which student, right? And also his view on the social media. One thing that it's getting really annoying is this battle for attention that some teaching pros do by trying to diss others. And, you know, reason doesn't shout, it talks. So if this is your way of getting attention, shame on you, man. You just don't have the reason then to do it. And Kieran, I would like your opinion on the interview.
Yeah, it was very interesting, but I must say I was trying to not to laugh too much. I loved the comparison between martial arts and golf teaching. I thought that was fantastic. And I actually, my inner child was thinking actually of perhaps with martial arts where Chuck Norris is in the role of Butch Harmon and Steven Seagal is in the role of Hank Haney. And that was really, so, it seemed like a rather an odd comparison, but actually I think it does make sense, but I thought it was quite amusing at the same time. But certainly an interesting point. I love the idea of the, I think in some ways with the great technology that we have now, I think it's more a case of learning how to use it and not to lose the great skills and the kind of intuition of the past in terms of golf teaching. But I must say, it's not a subject I know a great deal about, for the simple reason, one, I'm not a golf professional, of course, and secondly, I have never actually had a golf lesson. So I am pretty ignorant to the ways, the mystical ways of the martial artists. But it was certainly interesting to get a bit of an insight there from Fred and Michael.
Fred.
Yeah, you're right on, Kieran. And to your point about martial arts, Brian Hepler, who we had on last week from the PGA show, in his Tathata Golf, his teaching is based off of martial arts training, actually, and the movement of the body. It's really quite wonderful, actually. He does a great job with that. And also, Carlos, your point about using the X-ray analogy, you know, it's just another part of the teaching. That's exactly spot on. And I wanted to apologize for the background. We were on the floor of the show, and there was a lot of noise there, but I hope everybody is able to hear that okay. But the advice for other golf pros about, you know, getting in somebody's face on social media, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, it's just ridiculous. I make sure I never get involved in those things, and Mike Fay is going to address this same point also a little bit when we talk to him here in a minute. So, but yeah, I thought it was a great. I really enjoyed talking to Michael. He was really really wonderful to talk to, and really had a nice time chatting with him.
Okay, now we're going to pass to our practice range, which was also recorded earlier. And this one is with PGA professional Mike Fay, who joined us. He's the PGA Director of Player Performance at the Boyne Golf Academy at Boyne Resorts. He has assembled there a team of coaches from around the world to help you play better golf. Each of them has their own specialty, their golf instruction, golf fitness, mental game, history of golf, and rules of golf. He's also a Golf Channel Swing Fix instructor, U.S. Kids Golf Top 50 Masters Kid, teacher, and host of the Ask the Pro show. So let's roll that practice range segment, and then we'll give our thoughts on it.
Hello and welcome again. And now we're going to have a section. You know, we always have our DAG and we have our practice range, and we're kind of going to go and merge both of them today because we're very happy to welcome once again, a friend of the show, PGA professional, director of player performance, certified instructor of the Golf Channel Academy, and host of Ask the Pro, Mike Fay. Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Carlos. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Hey, Mike. I know we are speaking here on a cold February day in Michigan. I know there are a lot more people on the golf slopes at the Boyne Mountain than there are thinking about golf in northern Michigan right now. What are you doing up there to keep golf ready?
Well, we're really kind of changing the outlook of northern Michigan with our programs here at Boyne. It's been great, you guys. I think that we had that stigma of just putting away the clubs in October, November, and picking them back up in May. But we've done a pretty good job of trying to having indoor facilities and getting people to spend some time on their golf game, getting better. I mean, it is really, really cool to watch the people that I've coached in the winters get better the next summer. And, you know, one of my themes is don't you want to play really good next summer? Using things like TPI and golf fitness and stuff like that and all our technology so that they can play better next summer. You know, it was always disappointing to me to see that I would start getting players better, and it would be August, September, and then we'd be quitting golf. And now we can keep her going, you know, all year long. It's good stuff.
Yeah, that is good. I know especially your indoor facilities up there with training and all that. We're going to touch on that later. But also simulators and use of different things, hitting mats and nets and all the kind of stuff that everybody uses today, you can really keep an eye on where a golfer's at and keep working on some things. Hey, Mike, one of the things that you have been involved in for a few years is Ask the Pro. What is that, and can you tell us a little bit more about that? How does that work?
Ask the Pro is created in March of 2011. It's a pretty interactive show between the top instructors, commentators, and players from around the world, bring them together to get them the golf answers they need. I am just honored to be able to host the show. people send questions in to me every week about anything that has to do with golf. The first one we started, it was just straight golf instruction. Now it's anything and everything. And I send the questions out through Twitter on Sunday nights where they're answered by the best, world's best, we call it. So it's pretty neat to watch the interactions between people, watch how people gain followers and grow the game of golf in a way that we never thought would ever happen through technology. We know that everybody has their phone in their hand and all these things, and we're losing the battle to growing the game of golf to the internet, and I think this brings it right to them. It's good stuff.
You've even been doing the show, I know you do it on Sundays, but you've been doing it during the halftime of the Super Bowl the last couple of years, I believe.
Yeah, last 4 years. You know, I was just thinking that, you know, the halftime show, we
you
might
want to watch. You didn't want to watch Beyonce?
No, it's pretty neat. It is amazing how the Super Bowl halftime show for AstroPro has caught on. Everybody has their phone in their pocket now, and, you know, just whip it on and watch what happens over that, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes or so. You know, it's a lot shorter, condensed version of what we usually do, but it's a lot of fun. People, you know, our theme was watch a halftime show worth watching. So it's, you know, you can get some great golf tips, you can get the answers you need, and learn a lot like I have.
Now, you mentioned in your comment earlier the world's best. Who are some of the world's best instructors and announcers that people could interact with if they tweet into your show?
Sure. We've had Nick Faldo, Annika Sorenstam, David Duval, Brendel Shembley, you know, a lot of top golf people as far as announcers go. Some of the best golf instructors have been on there. A lot of Golf Digest top 50 teachers have been, and a lot of golf instructors that you may not have heard of that are absolutely fantastic. You know, and it's not necessarily about bringing big names to what we do with Ask the Pro. It's about helping people together. It's just been a lot of fun doing it.
Well, Mike, I know this is really a unique way to provide golf instruction with your Ask the Pro on Twitter. But I know you also use social media in other ways to stay in contact with your students and put tips out there and answer questions. Can you explain a little bit about how you're using social media in your golf instruction?
Absolutely. Aside from the Ask the Pro show, I have a website that's pretty large. We have four writers that write for my site. And really, when I created the website, my goal is to dedicate my website to my students, to keep them engaged in what they're doing all the time, keep in contact with them, constantly putting out content that makes them think and makes them want to play more golf and makes them want to get better. So, you know, between YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and now Instagram with the kids and everything else, you know, it keeps me pretty busy. But also my feeling is they come to me and they deserve that. You know, you guys, I think they deserve that extra get going, get your game going. It does. It definitely helps. Retention of play, there's no doubt. Definitely coming back more and more, not just for golf instruction, but to play more golf because it's on their mind. It's in their hand. We have to get people playing more. And one huge way is social media, websites, keeping in contact, emailing, communication, really.
We should mention that they can find you at Mike Fay Golf. That's Mike, M-I-K-E, Fay, F-A-Y, Golf, G-O-L-F.com. And also, there's a tab there at your website, MikeFayGolf.com, that you just click on for the Ask a Pro show. So if you don't have a Twitter account now or you need to open a Twitter account, you can find Mike on Twitter right here on his website also. Carlos, I believe you had some other questions about technology for Mike.
Of course, I'm the technology person. You know, I might be a little biased on this, right? But you know, in an era where Pac-Man and FlightScope are the kings, you know, players now having some feedback on especially their ball and swing are doing at any given time, launch angles, spin rates, acronyms, the team maybe better suited for baseball sabermetrics. They are now commonplace in practice matches. And, you know, many golfers are familiar with the idea of using technology to analyze their golf swing in order to improve their game. But then we see that it's a fine line then for even the best players to trust the gut instinct that got you to that elite level or buy into what the numbers say about the state of your game. So I would ask you, would you tell us what about your feelings about using TrackMan, FlightScope, and other technology training products that are there out there in the market?
Absolutely. You know, at Boeing we have TrackMan. We also have Gears, which is the 3D motion analysis of the golf swing and gives us club data for club fitting and things like that and what we're doing. So we're really, really high-tech at Boeing. I love it. I think it's fantastic, but also I think you guys are right. It has to be used in the right way. You know, we can't just stand in front of a monitor and go, oh, your golf swing is doing this and doing that. See you later and have a good day. I use it for a measurement. Not only does it show me whether I'm doing a good job, if they're doing a good job, if they're progressing. It's about measuring. We're on gears and we're measuring what's going on with the golf club that day or what's going on with the body, or we're on track band measuring ball flight and how much better are we getting. I think that that is the way that to be using technology. I think there's a trap sometimes we get in front of that screen and we forget that really it's our students that counts, not the technology. You know, you guys, I really believe that.
Even with all the technology and all those things, and I know you believe very much in this, people come to me and say, well, how do I want to hit the ball? I bought this new $500 driver and I'm still only hitting it. I'm not picking up any yardage. I said, well, you know, you got to get a little bit fitter, guy. You got to increase your flexibility.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about your stance on fitness and flexibility and those kind of things and what you teach and what you promote.
Absolutely. I mean, I believe in a holistic approach to golf, so a big part of that is what we do with our body and golf fitness and things like that. I found out a long time ago that position in my career where I was teaching these players and they weren't getting better, and I was thinking to myself, well, why aren't they getting better? Well, I found out that one of the reasons why is because they just couldn't do what I wanted them to do with the golf club physically. Getting involved in golf fitness and being certified in TPI and training my players and finding out what's wrong with their bodies and helping them to get better fit, it's fantastic. I've seen some awesome improvements in players because now all of a sudden they can move. They can move better. They're getting stronger. We've seen increased club head speeds. We've seen, you know, all the stats throughout the entire, not just their score, but more enjoyment in the game. Have some more fun playing this game. And I kind of relate it to their life, too, you know. You know, if you have a hard time tying your shoes and you can't touch your toes, it's a problem. And so everyday life, if we can be a little bit more fit, more flexible, stronger here and there, and whatever I can do to help point those things out and help them design programs to fit into their needs and what their goals are. I try and do, you guys. It's a lot of fun. And that's a big part of what I do all winter long, just working with players. And usually I'll work a lot of times, half the time, on golf fitness with a certain player and the other half of the time on what they're doing with the golf swing. So.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question. You actually build that into your training program or your overall schedule where they spend so much time on fitness on different things. Maybe they can increase their turn or get better leg drive or whatever, and then you bring that over into the golf swing.
I'm constantly asking why. Why is this player doing this? Why can't they do this? Trying to help them find the answers that they need and get them better. It is. It's pretty cool to watch how much better players get when they spend all that time on these certain little things. And it's a bunch of little things, you know, that add up to a big thing at the end of the road.
Mike, you've been receiving a lot of awards the last several years, including this year's U.S. Kids Golf Top 50 Masters Teachers Award. You've been named by your peers as the 2016 Michigan PGA Player Development Recipient. With that, I know comes the obligation and request to come to other clubs and other meetings and training sessions to talk and about what you're doing to help players improve. Are those kind of opportunities coming down the road for you?
They have. I mean, next week I'll be in Toronto speaking at Jason Hellman's teaching and coaching workshop there, where I'm teaching the teachers a lot about, you know, building a business and building a brand and what I'm doing with junior golf instruction up at Boyne, a whole bunch of different things. And also I spend a lot of time in the community too. I've been asked to go and speak about, you know, building your business and what do you do online as far as social media goes and stuff like that, and helping people to gain a bigger following, helping them to communicate better with their customers. Those opportunities have been coming. It's been quite exciting, actually, to be able to do that and help people.
Yeah, Mike, last week we were speaking on our practice range about how to attract young women to golf. And overall, it's a very good question, how to attract new golfers, right? But a lot of golfers see golf as or prospective golfers see it like an intimidating game. It's long. It might be boring and all that, but how can we simplify and not frustrate those prospective new golfers and attract more to them?
As far as simplifying the game of golf and getting more players to play, yeah, I think a lot of it goes out to us guys as PGA professionals. I think Brent Osambly this past year wrote an article about us growing the game of golf, and we've taken ourselves away from being out in front, you know, getting more players to play golf, and we're more in administrative role, things like that. So I think it's a big deal for golf professionals to engage more with these new golfers and get them to understand that, you know, learning golf is a journey. If someone was trying to teach me how to play piano, I could never do it. 5-week session, you know? It's kind of like that. Golf is a learned skill. I think that if people get hooked on it because they love it. They see the rewards of it and having fun. But there's patience involved in that too. So,
do you think there's a way we can simplify this? I mean, you know, we talked about this, Mike. There's so much information readily mm-hmm. available out there on social media. It doesn't become too confusing. You know, every new golfer says, oh, this guy says this, and then this guy says that. And
right.
You know, is there too much? How do they filter this stuff out?
When a student comes to me, I try to engage with them with the website, with all these different things, because I want them to hear what I'm saying and not necessarily what the latest video or article is saying about what someone else is trying to do in their golf swing. And I'm getting ideas in their head because they need to, it's kind of like going to a doctor and then going to a different doctor and then going to a different doctor and going to a different, you know, how can you get better unless someone knows your history, someone knows where you've been, someone that really knows you. Very high retention rate because of what I do, trying to keep my students engaged in what they're doing. I try to create videos that are kind of right across the board for everyone, but then when I work with someone, it's a specific problem that they have, and it's really only to them. So it's not everybody does this kind of thing. It is important. That's how we grow the game of golf. That's how we get more people to play more golf. You know, Fred, we were talking about that, engaging with them constantly about what they're doing.
Carlos, any other questions for Mike before we let him get on about his day?
No, I think that it has been great, Mike, to have you again here. We would like to thank you for your time, and best of luck there and best of success to you there and the show and everything that you're doing. So thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on your show. It's fantastic. And let's get some warm weather going on.
Oh, yeah.
We've been talking to Mike Fay, who is the Director of Player Performance at Boyne Mountain Golf Resort in northern Michigan. It's a beautiful place up there. Right now, they're doing a lot of skiing up there, not too much golfing. But you can contact Mike or catch up with him, view his website at MikeFayGolf.com, M-I-K-E. FAYGOLF.com. Also, he is the host of Ask the Pro on Twitter every Sunday evening. Get great information from the top instructors in the world that Mike helps facilitate. So, again, Mike, thank you very much for your time. Good luck. Best to you. And we'll get up there and have a lunch one of these days.
Sounds good. Thank you guys so much.
There you have it. That was Mike Fay. Kieran, what are your thoughts on the interview?
Well, I have a few thoughts, and firstly, I think we should actually start a petition to get Mike on the halftime show of the Super Bowl next year, particularly if he dresses like Beyonce. That is certainly indeed.
That would not be a good picture.
That would be a sight, wouldn't it? So maybe yeah. not. But yeah, I think interesting interview there. And two things stood out to me. One actually was the question you asked Carlos about the technology and TrackMan and so on. I think Mike touched on a really interesting point. And for me, that players, when they see a professional golfers when they go there, it can be hard. And Fred, you've probably experienced at times when golfers find it hard to trust what they're being told at times. They're not convinced it will work for them, even though you're sure it will, and it probably will do, but they don't believe it at that time as they're going through that process. And I think tools like TrackMan, which show a tangible measurement of improvement, even small improvement, I think that information can actually give further confidence and actually more trust from a player to their coach if it's used correctly for that reason, or where they actually trust the changes that the coach has been recommending them. Another thing as well I think was really interesting that he brought up was actually the idea of the relationship between a local club pro in particular to a player. I think that's important as well. I think people perhaps focus too much on the tips they can get on the internet or in magazines. For me, I think trying to learn the game of golf from a magazine is pretty ridiculous, to be honest with you. I don't think that's going to work at all. Maybe in the mental side of it, perhaps, but I think it's not really a game you can learn from a book, in other words. Having that connection with you and your club professional, I think, is important in terms of obviously, he or she will know about your game, know about who you are, see you on a regular basis, understand the way your body works, even. Because everyone's different. Even though every player, every coach probably has a set philosophy of how they think the game should be played in their mind, I think it's very important. And Butch Armin, in particular, has talked about how every player is different and you have to almost adapt your own philosophy to the particular skill or body of a certain person. You know, a guy who's 6'5" and tall and thin is going to have a different sort of framework than someone who's short and fat. Doesn't mean that the same small person can't play as well as a tall guy or vice versa, but it's a different kind of way to do things, I'd imagine. But I think as well it is important two things. One, the technology, and second, I think it is true that some professionals have become slightly disengaged from players at their local club. And it's important to get that connection because you see a lot of young players most of the young professionals in the game actually grew up working closely with a club professional at their course in terms of they learned the game from them, then began working for them in the shop or whatever else and getting involved in the game from that standpoint. But I think, again, the game has so many challenges with young players, not as young players, any player, in fact. I mean, it's always been the same thing throughout time. People think bring it as a new challenge. And yet it's always been three things. One, it's time. Two, it's cost. And three, probably the most important of all, is difficulty. The game is very hard. It's very hard to. It takes a long time potentially to even get to a standard that's remotely acceptable for a lot of people to actually enjoy the game. And I think that's important where people should, rather than worrying about the latest equipment and running out and spending $500 on a new driver from TaylorMade, the 15th one they've released this year, or whatever it is, you know, maybe put some of that money towards getting some lessons. You know, maybe spend time in the range and training aids maybe. You know, see your professional, get some tips, get understanding of what maybe is wrong with your game, then spend the time trying to improve on that and work on that. And Fred, I have a question for you, which would be that for your students that you work with and people that you see, I always think that far too many amateur players that I know become obsessed, overly so, with the short game. And for me, that's not where most players lose shots on the course. Certainly not, I can certainly relate to that. But I think a lot of players and amateur players actually focus on putting and chipping because they almost feel that's an easier thing for them to improve on. And it is maybe try and hit the ball further off a tee or straighter off a tee, more consistent. So would you say, Fred, that most players in the end lose most of their shots perhaps off the tee than they do anywhere else in the course?
No, I disagree wholeheartedly with that, Kieran.
Oh, do you really?
Everybody wants to grab the driver and hit the long ball. It's a struggle to get them over to the chipping green. And to be quite honest with you, it's the chipping green is the easiest place to teach the golf swing. The chipping action is a small piece of the larger golf swing. And I love to take students over when we finally get over to the chipping green and they get that feel of actually hitting down to the ball and letting the club bring the ball up in the air. it translates back over to then their full swing, and they quit trying to lift it up and are able to swing much better. So, yeah, we don't have a lot of time to get into that, but, yeah, I completely disagree with that. And for me, both interviews tonight, Michael Breed and Mike Fay, I they just fit together so nicely to give the listeners kind of an overview of modern teaching techniques. And the fact that TrackMan and FlightScope and all these things are out there, they don't have to use them. Use the basics. You know, listen to your guy. Go to somebody. Get some lessons. You know, get serious about it. And don't listen to everything that comes down the pike. Don't read everything that's on social media. Filter stuff out a little bit. But listen to the guy that's trying to work with you. He probably knows what he's talking about.
Well, there you have it. That was our practice range and our VAGs with two great PGA professionals, Michael Breed and Mike Fay. Now we're going to move on to our final patch, and I'm going to start talking about, you know, Bob Parsons. He's the founder of Parsons Extreme Golf, the company with that very expensive $5,000 club set with sophisticated miling and metals, which adds a high-end approach to golf club manufacturing. If you haven't heard of him, well, you might have seen those famous racy Super Bowl ads of GoDaddy.com with Danica Patrick and all that. Well, that was the company that he first built and sold for Mega Millions. That's him. But now the thing with PXG, which he formed last year, has signed 12 tour players. He claims that all 12 have come to him, and they didn't go after any of them. But getting a group of players to join the company has given it a big push. Ryan Moore was the first player to sign on with PXG early last year, and his clubs became a bit of a curiosity on the driving range throughout the PGA Tour. Then they signed the likes of Zach Johnson, Billy Horschel, James Hamm, Chris Kirk, and Charles Howard III. LPGA Tour players Christy Kerr, Jerina Piller, Allison Lee via Jersey Caddy, and Selena Parks, as well as Anna Rosen, are also on the payroll. So is the Champions Tour player Rocco Mediate. Wow, so whether it's true or not, believable, you know, the story that all 12 came to him, that it's not for me to discuss now. But the main thing here is that this group can become the cast for 12 is enough series instead of the 8 is enough, because Parsons says that's enough. 12 is enough, 13 ain't going to help them anymore, so he will stay with 12 signed players, and that's it. So no more. So if you were calling Bob for signing there, no, he said 12 is enough, because as he says, everybody has been calling him and he has called nobody. And finally, I have to talk about, you know, Quail Hollow. Ahead of stepping into the major spotlight, Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte will undergo some serious changes ahead of hosting the 2017 PGA Championship. After this year's Wells Fargo Championship is finished in May, the course will be closed in order to redesign a significant portion of the front nine, as well as to change the grass on the putting surfaces. Club President Johnny Harris confirmed the changes, but otherwise declined comment of the specifics. But the Charlotte Observer reports the club is expected to work with designer Tom Fazio, who redid the George Cobb 1961 design back in 1997, on implementing a plan that largely centers on the club's front nine. With the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow next year, the Wells Fargo Championship will be played at Eagle Point in Wilmington, North Carolina next year before returning to Quail Hollow 2018 and 2019. The club will also be hosting the 2021 President's Cup, Kieran.
Yes, interesting times for Quail Hollow going forward, of course, hosting that PGA Championship coming up. And over in the European Tour, obviously, I mentioned a minute ago, of course, about the challenges that the game has in terms of attracting players, with the difficulty of it, the cost of it, and indeed the time it takes to play. And that has been a challenge that's been combated by the European Tour in recent weeks, when they introduced a new monitoring policy, a new system to actually try and quicken their players in their tournaments up and try and reduce the ridiculous amount of time that the tour professionals now take, and that seems to feed into the amateur game at all levels. And Keith Pelley, the European Tour have been slapping themselves in the back, really, in recent weeks. The policies introduced at the Dubai Desert Classic, Abu Dhabi Championship for the Desert Swing, and five players have been picked up on this monitoring policy, including, of course, Jordan Spieth, who was the first player to picked up at the Abu Dhabi Championship. And in the end, it has had some impact. We can put it kindly like that. So in Abu Dhabi, the first and second rounds, compared with last year, the the rounds were actually reduced by 5 minutes, a whopping 5 minutes. What can you do in 5 minutes? I guess a lot, but okay, who knows? But and then it, we'll move on from that. But anyway, at the Qatar Masters, indeed, it was only 4 minutes reduced, so even less time from the year before. And at the Abu Dhabi Championship, it was at Dubai Desert Classic, indeed, it was 10 minutes. So we've had a slight reduction from the European Tour in terms of the times that they're taking to play, and they've been congratulating themselves, perhaps a little bit over the top, it has to be said. Because I say, I don't think 5 minutes is going to really change anyone's life. It's not going to make me watch more golf. It's not going to, you won't notice it. Yeah, it's certainly a laudable effort, because players taking 4 to 5 hours to get around these courses is ridiculous. It's certainly not attractive to watch at times, both in person and also on television. So it's certainly a lot of effort to actually go out there and try and decrease the round times and so on. But early days, what I'll say for the European Tour, it's very early days so far, only a month into the policy, really. We'll judge it better towards the end of the year. But if rounds are only going to be reduced by 5 to 10 minutes on average, then we haven't really got that far. We have to find something more radical, whether that should be setting a particular maximum time for a round. There has to be something more, I believe, radical if we were to actually tackle this problem in the pro game, because this monitoring policy, once the players are very clever, they're very sneaky. When they find a way around something, they will exploit it. You know, Bernard Langer was the master of playing on the clock. When he'd play at a certain place, then when he was put on the clock for playing slowly, he'd speed up until he caught up with the group ahead of him. And then, of course, he'd slow back down again. He did this continually and has done this to the present day. And so the players seem to be taking longer and longer and longer, and it's making the game less attractive to watch. And I think that's feeding into the amateur game as well, not just in terms of the players watching and not playing, but actually the habits of amateur golfers. They watch players on television and see them taking so long to the huge practice routines, the huge 5 practice swings, or visualising a shot, and every player now does that on the local course, and it doesn't make them any better. And makes the game even longer for everybody else, and it doesn't help anybody. So it's, again, a lot of effort from the European Tour. It's good that they've done something about it, but it's not quite at the stage of backslapping and congratulating themselves just yet. And also, there was not the sexiest story of all time, but the world amateur golf rankings were changed recently to the unawareness of everybody. They snuck it out on Thursday, and no one heard all about it. And indeed, the rankings have actually been criticised in the past for not being particularly representative of current form of players in the amateur game, because they focus specifically on rounds, the current events, ranking scratch scores, divisors, bonus ranking points, and all these made up sort of arbitrary terms. But what they've done instead, it's not a 1 year system, and they've actually extended it now to 2 years, where the points are counted over 2 years. Which is very similar to what the official world golf ranking does and for the professional game, but the difference here is, unlike the OWGR, there is no aging of points, so points won 2 years ago in the amateur game will actually count the same for points won last week, which seems complete madness when you think about how can you judge someone now compared to what they were 2 years ago? Things can change so dramatically. So the rankings don't make much sense, but does it matter? Well, it does. It can affect players getting into important amateur events, and so on, and obviously seedings and whatever else, so, and obviously prestige. So the amateur rankings have been changed, probably not for the better, but we'll wait to see how that plays out in the future. And maybe even they knew themselves, because they released it on a rather odd time of day when no one was looking, no one was paying attention, which is never a good sign, is it, Fred?
No, they were pretty sneaky about it. That's why I wanted somebody to kind of talk about it a little bit. Thank you, Kieran. Hey, we want to wish Stacey Lewis a very happy birthday today. It's her 31st birthday. She's seemed a little bit out of sorts lately. She's had 9 runner-ups in the last 2.5 years. Hasn't found the winner's circle since, I think, June of 2014. I'm looking for her to do better here going forward. Another story just came out. There's going to be another evening primetime TV golf exhibition. This June 7th, we're going to have Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, along with each having a celebrity amateur guest, play in an exhibition up here in Detroit at the Detroit Country Club. So we'll have to watch for more details coming down the road on that. and we're changing the name of the Colonial to the Dean and DeLuca Invitational. We're taking Colonial completely out of it. I hate that. Mm. It's the longest running tournament on the PGA Tour. It's been around for 70 years. It'll be played May 23rd through the 29th this year. The Dean and DeLuca Invitational just doesn't have the same sound as the Colonial, guys. I'm sorry, I can't.
Is that going to be a golf tournament?
Yeah, the Colonial, exactly. The Dean and DeLuca. It's not a radio show. It's not a. Oh. It's not a new TV show. It's the Dean and DeLuca Invitational.
Oh.
Kieran, great to have you on the show tonight, man. Thanks a lot.
Hey, it's been a pleasure, Fred. Thank you.
Thank you, Kieran. Well, back Niners.
Thanks, Carla.
Thank you for everything. Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us. Special thanks once more time to our friend and colleague, the European guru, Kieran Clark, for being us with this week. Kieran, as usual, your knowledge of the game and commentaries are flawless, my friend. Thank you for everything.
Well, that's debatable.
Also to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Michael Breed, and our contributor for the practice range, Mike Fay. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Kieran Clark and Fred Olvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Take care, everybody.